It was muddy and cold, and I was in heels and a flimsy sweater. And I couldn't get my car hood open for some reason, though I desperately needed to add windshield wiper fluid that I just purchased into the proper receptacle. And a young man sitting in his own car saw me struggling from two spots away and got out of his car, came over and gently told me to get back in out of the cold, and he proceeded to open the hood with ease and fill the wiper fluid for me. The school that Liliana attends recently sent out photos of their service trip to the SPCA in Hancock County, where middle schoolers were donating the funds from their recent bottle drive. In the pictures that the school sent out, these salty, sarcastic, newly minted teens, who usually act like they're allergic to vulnerability of any kind, are gently cradling this elderly cat who's paralyzed from a car accident, and they come home advocating for her immediate adoption. Thank you, and please, can I help you? Are you okay? Would you like half my sandwich? Be patient, traffic is stopped for the mother duck and her ducklings. We offer shelter, we make a meal, we choose paper over plastic, we say sorry and correct ourselves when we make a mistake. Maybe we remember something about someone and then we follow up after. Maybe we let our eyes light up in joy and welcome whenever someone new walks into the room. Maybe we're that new someone lit up from the welcome in someone else's eyes. Small kindness feels really big to those who receive it. And what, pray tell, Reverend Amy, does this have to do with justice and equity? The inspiration for this service is a quote I read in our Soul Matters material for February by Paul Hawken, who is a businessman turned environmental thinker and author, and he wrote most recently the book titled Regeneration, Ending the Climate Crisis in One Generation. Have any of you read it? I haven't read it yet. I've ordered it. He said, when asked if I'm pessimistic or optimistic about the future, my answer is always the same. If you look at the science about what is happening on Earth and aren't pessimistic, you don't understand the data. But if you meet the people who are working to restore this Earth and the lives of the poor, and you aren't optimistic, you haven't got a pulse. What I see everywhere in the world are ordinary people willing to confront despair, power, and incalculable odds in order to restore some semblance of grace, justice, and beauty to this world. You know that famous quote by Frederick Buechner, the one that's often changed to avoid God reference? Here it is in its original form. The place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. We know that one, right? And that's what I thought of when I read Hawkins' take on pessimism and optimism. And the truth, I think, that if you're paying attention to all of it, if you let yourself be fully alive in the good and the bad of what's happening, then not only will you cry out in despair, but you will also notice that your heart beats in hope every single time you recognize the actions of those who, in their own big and little ways, live restoration, live justice into the world. In the dismal outlook that I can often embody, Hawken and Buechner remind me of the places that I feel hope. Nothing makes me more aware of that pulse. Nothing makes me more alive and hopeful than seeing all the varied manifestations of kindness that exist in the world between humans and all of creation. I wonder if maybe there isn't some new answer we're waiting for. It's there in every hard conversation that we have, in the willingness to go out of our way and not stop trying. It's letting the ordinary small things become big, huge, monumental movements that can't be ignored. It's refusing to other, to hurt, to deny dignity and worth. Justice and equity are nothing more than the platinum rule in action. And the platinum rule is nothing more than divine kindness. In our recent Wellspring class, we were having this conversation about empathy and about listening to one another and about how important it is to try to understand another's experiences and point of view. And we want to say to those who are different from us or those that we disagree with, I understand how you feel. But we came to a realization in this conversation that we can't really understand how others feel all the time. We can't put ourselves in others' shoes in a way that we might like. Sometimes, often even, the differences are too great, too complicated. And any attempt at saying, I get it, or I know exactly what you're going through, ends up being shallow, or patronizing, or simply wrong. So what's the answer? I think it's about trust. I think that when someone tells me what their life is like, how it's different from mine, or what they need, and I don't understand it, I can't find a place in my body to resonate with it, I can't meet them there, I just trust them. I trust that what they're telling me about their experience is true. When someone says, I do not identify as one gender or another, will you please use they, them pronouns? I don't have to do anything except trust them and do as they want unto them. They want unto them. When I tell a man that the experience of being a woman is scary sometimes and belittling at others, I don't need him to tell me that he gets it, or that he's been through it too, or I think you're just misunderstanding the situation. I need him to trust me and work with me to change it. When a Black person shares their stories of racism right here in our own little town, in our own little corner of the world, I don't have to have seen it, experienced it, heard it. I don't have to know it in any way. I have to trust them, and I have to work with them to change it. Justice and equity are more than creating the world we want. Though those are the easiest words to say, I say them a lot. I will probably say them a lot more. But there's a whole lot of assumption in that phrase that I use all the time. Justice and equity is about looking around and seeing what kind of world is needed by those on the margins, those hurting the most, and then trusting that creating that world will be good for all of us. I feel hope and optimism whenever and wherever there is that simple effort. Whenever and wherever there's that simple kindness, it makes me want to keep going. It staves off stagnation and inertia. A moment when someone does something for someone else just because. It's a moment of remembering that we're all in this together. We care about each other. We need each other. We see the value in sharing, in this sharing of humanity and earth and creation. When that happens, I see that great, I love you, the great one. In every held open door, in every pot of soup, in every offer of care, in every smile and open invitation, in every single human being who is using their great gladness to meet some deep need, those cleaning birds and sea life off oil after our pollution, those tying themselves to trees in threatened forests and along pipelines, those who stop traffic in the name of peace, those who grow vegetables and share them, this is a big one, those who raise babies to be participants in this life's great journey, in life's deep healing, not knowing how it will all end, and despite the grim predictions all around. And here's a little disclaimer. I feel like it's a little bit my job as your minister to buoy you up on a Sunday morning, to reconnect you to humanity and hope and a desire to be part of the world and the solutions that we so desperately need. I feel like it's partly my job to remind you that your life matters. Your small, everyday participations. The way we are together, the way we are together, is part of healing something much bigger than our little community. And I can't do that as a Pollyanna and ignore how bad things really are. So when I look at the data, so to speak, when we see the climate reports and we delve into the true causes of violence and oppression at the national, governmental, financial level, small kindness feels small. Insignificant even, not helpful. I don't think that's true, but I can go there. One of the other things we talked about yesterday in that multi-church conversation is how technically the people in any nation have the power to direct their government. We, the people. How we do not have to be victims of a system that does not represent our wants and desires. And in addition to talking about the truth that the majority of Jews in Israel do not want what's happening there to be happening, and the majority of Palestinians do not support Hamas, we also use the example right here in our own country of the overturning of Roe v. Wade, and how, as of June of last year, Gallup polls showed that 85% of Americans believe abortion should be legal in at least certain circumstances. Higher than when polling in 1975. We puzzled over how all of the powerful forces held by the few can overwhelm the desires and the work of the many. It's so discouraging, and it's so complicated, and as someone else said in our connections conversation on Thursday, it's not pessimistic to see all that. It's realistic. And if you're not feeling overwhelmed right now, you don't understand the data. But here's where I land. I look around, and I see good people who love one another, who are willing to forgive one another, and restore relationships where they're broken. I look around at people who would give of what they have to feed and shelter those who need it. I look around and I see people who know kindness and sorrow as the deepest things, who can see someone hurting or dying and know that they could be that person too. And if you can look around this room or your Zoom screens, your home, your city, your town, and not see the beauty, the justice, the grace, and the healing, if you can't feel hopeful looking around, maybe you don't have a pulse. So this week, I want you to ask yourself, where does the pulse of aliveness and hope beat in you? What gives you great gladness? What is the deep hunger that God is calling you to? What story is asking for your trust, not your understanding? What story is asking for your trust, not your understanding? And what kindness have you done or witnessed that could further the cause of justice in the world? We are on a journey together. And because this road is long and we can't really see very far ahead, I'm asking that we sing together our closing hymn, number 168, which is One More Step. Now, I have something to say about this hymn. The lyrics were inspired, again, by different words by Frederick Buechner. There can be no peace and joy for me until there is peace and joy for you also. The sentiment in the lyrics is good and righteous and motivating, but it's important to acknowledge that it is ableist language, this one more step, in the title and in the first verse, because the way we move forward in the world is not always in steps. Sometimes it's in inches. Sometimes it's rolling on wheels. Sometimes, most often, in fact, it's in our minds and our hearts more than any physical movement of the body. So I'd like us to sing this together this morning, just holding that truth in mind. Translate as you need to. Hold an awareness first and foremost that all movement forward in the pursuit of justice and peace is sacred and necessary.